Blog Talk Radio.
Who is January Jones? She is not a young, beautiful, talented actress on Mad Men. She is not an older, gorgeous, exotic dancer from the Johnny Carson Show. She is an author, and she wrote Thou Shall Not Wine, the 11th Commandment, that reached number one at Amazon.com. She is a reality TV golf personality with World High Stakes Golf televised on HDNet. She is a humorist and winologist expert. She is your featured host today on January Jones Sharing Success Stories. So sit back, relax, and get ready to laugh and listen to Ms. Jones with her eclectic roster of guests as you learn life's lessons. These stories plus sharing equals success. Welcome, and remember, beware, because you are entering the no whining world of January Jones.
Now let me ask you a question. Have you ever wondered who killed Kennedy? Well, I certainly have, and I know most of you have too. Can you believe it's been 50 years since President Kennedy was assassinated? Would you like to learn about what the CIA, the FBI, and Castro knew ahead of time? Things they knew before the assassination. Have you ever wanted to know why the CIA and FBI chose not to go public the day of the assassination? Can you imagine still believing in the single gun theory after all this time? Tell me, do you know why Kennedy threw the Rat Pack out of the White House? Have you ever heard about the CIA's secret release of prisoners from American jails? Very interesting. Or better yet, have you heard about a fantastic book called Smooth Criminal, A One-Man American Crime Wave? Now, would you like to meet someone who has some of the answers that we're looking for tonight? Now, are you ready to learn more about who killed Kennedy? If you can answer yes or maybe to any of these questions, then you are in the right place, and I would like to welcome you to January Jones Sharing Success Stories. Today, I will be introducing you to my guest, who is a success coach extraordinaire, and he will provide us with wonderful, informative information about the Kennedy assassination. I'm pleased to announce that our show now has over 1.8 million listeners to date. Also, LinkedIn has announced that my profile was one of the top 5% most viewed during 2012. Now, let me tell you a little bit about my guest today. He is a professional on-air broadcaster, capable of telling a vital story in an information manner, a former major market and anchor, news director, and network news assignment editor. He is currently speaking on broadcast news history and the news and why we are not getting it. He has also been an investigative journalist, 30 years as a network news assignment editor, major market news anchor and news director, demographic researcher, public speaker, national narrations and voiceovers, top 40 DJ. It's my pleasure to welcome to the show today Bill Dean. Hi, Bill. How are you doing?
Well, it is terrific as you name all of that. I said I did all of that, and I'm only 14 years old.
I know. My, time flies when you're having fun, doesn't it?
Well, it's been a great business for me, and I found that I could do some good and that's why it's rewarding. And some nights I've worked and working on that book and researching. Sometimes I get going and I wind up 36 hours without any sleep.
Oh my gosh!
I get so interested in things, yeah. Then I collapse.
Well, yeah, I certainly anyone would collapse. Now, we're talking tonight about the Kennedy assassination, and you are a fantastic expert, and I'm so delighted to have you on the show. Share with my listeners, Bill, where you were when this assassination occurred.
Well, I was up in Fort Lauderdale doing a middle-of-the-road thing, and I was getting back to WFUN. In Miami, which was really at one time absolutely the most creative rock and roll station in the country under Bud Connell, but he had left and I left for a while. But on that particular day, it was very funny. You know, every radio station had organ music and classical music and so forth, and that's what they were playing. And they picked up on this in the afternoon, all of the stations. And in panic, people were calling. Here it was about 9 o'clock at night at WFUN, and in panic, people were calling and complaining because we were still rocking and rolling. And so we had to actually run out to a record store and buy some organ music and stop the commercials because we didn't know any better.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's really true.
Well, it was just you know, it was a defining moment in time for our generation. I mean, just the way Pearl Harbor was for our parents, everyone remembers where they were, what they were doing when this assassination occurred. I noticed in the paper today that there's a lot of shows coming up, especially asking people where they were when this happened. You know, I did a show earlier on this, and interestingly enough, most of the people who listen to our shows, they weren't even born when this assassination took place.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny. The demographics on this thing is just amazing. Mm-hmm. It's bringing us together. I sense this. It, for this period, it's bringing the old and the young alike. I think that the young are more fascinated about this thing because they don't know anything about it, and they know that it was such a big event. There's such interest. I mean, demographically, you know, you probably got an audience of 18-year-olds and 75-year-olds at the same time right now.
Yeah, and you know, in USA Today, I was looking, and there were over 10 books about the assassination. Millions of people have written books about it, and myself.
Oh, they sure have. Over 1,000 books on this thing.
I know, and it's always a hot topic, and basically, I feel it is because it's an unsolved crime. People are still asking who killed Kennedy. And the younger generation is, you know, very interested in this. And I agree with you. It does bring people together during this 50th anniversary. Hard to believe it's 50 years, isn't it?
It certainly is. I must say, maybe this is a good opportunity to say that the JFK movie is worthwhile only for its play acting, which is pretty doggone good, and also the single bullet theory, which is really trashed in the book. Mm-hmm. But the rest of it, Garrison and everything else, is really, at that particular time, and we're talking about, I guess, about 15, 18 years ago when the JFK movie came out, my daughter was in that group, and here she was in college, and she was wondering, you know, what it was all about. And her group, they just were so curious. They marched off to this dumb movie, and they came out with their idea. Now I know what happened. Uh-huh. It was all fairy. It was all Garrison. And it's Walter Cronkite used to rage over at CBS on that movie and said, this is the greatest travesty in news business. This is the greatest tragedy, he would say. he says, that Oliver Stone, he'd say.
Yeah.
And the truth is, if you want to see drama, it's okay, but don't believe that movie. And I'm really surprised that Oliver Stone says, we're reissuing it, so right now. Yes, and we can't get away from it.
Well, you know, with the 50th year anniversary, we're going to be hearing and seeing a lot of things this upcoming year about the Kennedy assassination, Camelot, what things were like. Now, let's talk a little bit about what you know about the CIA, the FBI, and Castro knowing ahead of time of the impending assassination and doing nothing about it. That is just an amazing statement.
Well, you got to know how the CIA operates and how the FBI does too, and you got to know that Fidel Castro. I mean, yeah, we had the Bay of Pigs disaster over there, but you just cannot you cannot come out like Fidel Castro on this little tiny island and say, yes, I know what's going on. Yes, I knew Lee Harvey Oswald. Yes, we were friends. If he had said that, forget about the Bay of Pigs. We'd have B-52s bombing Cuba, and they would go into Cuba and they would take Castro in handcuffs the way they did Noriega in Panama, and they'd throw him in jail for 20 years. And it's very interesting what happened on that, because Castro, I mean, he's not like, he wasn't like a Hitler, where he could raise a crowd to, you know, to crazy. He is like a college professor. He's very, very smart. And there's a book called Castro's Secrets by Brian Littell that's out this year. He was like the number one guy for the CIA down in Central America and in South America. And he said, we were so fooled. And he said he was CIA, and he wrote this now. He says, we were so fooled. We thought that Castro was just another banana republic dictator. And he said, because we had that attitude, he had spies, and we didn't even know it, right in the CIA. He had them over in Switzerland. He had them in Japan. And in my book, you'll see where one of the guys was in down there, had been sent down there by the CIA, and he was one of the guys that was going to poison Castro, and this was a famous restaurant of Castro. He used to go there once or twice a week, and the moment our smooth criminal goes over there, the moment he stops going to that room, Castro stops going, and I mean, that's how well-informed they were, and the CIA just couldn't figure it out. Now, the CIA and the FBI, the way they operate, would definitely know about Lee Harvey Oswald. They actually were following him. And not too many people know that they tried to kill him. They tried to kill Kennedy in Miami, tried to kill him in Tampa, tried to kill him in Chicago. That was 3 weeks before Dallas.
Wow.
And they finally got him. And the CIA, if they held news conference, the CIA never holds news conference. The FBI would hold it for them and told the country, yeah, they're trying to kill the president. I mean, it would drive us crazy, because all of these assassination attacks or attempts are going on, and they're probably going on right now, and we don't know it, and they get foiled all the time.
Right.
And now if the just imagine if the FBI and CIA came out a few hours after the assassination of the president in Dallas and said, yeah, we knew him. Yeah, we were. And immediately people would say, you dummies, why didn't you put him in jail? They're looking at a lot of people. They missed. They should have put him in jail, but they didn't know that he was that serious at that point.
Well, and, you know, the reality is that he was one of many, because when you're talking about having enemies, the Kennedy family, you could just go down the list, everyone.
Absolutely. And yeah. and why Kennedy was going to Dallas was it was a real hotbed of conservatism at that time.
Yeah.
And he went there and he had a rousing crowd, and politically that was very good.
Mm-hmm.
Like a year before he would be before the election would be coming up again.
Sure.
And they were eight deep. Somebody asked me on one of these interviews, says, why it was so busy at Dealey Plaza? Were the assassins there? Why was Kennedy killed there? I said, that is the dullest area. I said, they were eight deep in downtown Dallas before they got to Dealey
mm-hmm.
Plaza.
Yeah.
And, people were really enthusiastic. It was a beautiful
yeah.
day, and that's why the top wasn't on the car. And I said, that was the quietest place, Dealey Plaza. It was like the end of the trip. It really was the end of the trip.
And it really, truly was. You know, we're going to take a break now, Bill, and hear about your host. And when we come back with Bill Dean, I want to talk about the deathbed confession that clarified the whole Kennedy assassination for Bill Dean. We'll be right back.
Have you ever met someone who was unforgettable? Someone who has touched your heart and soul? People who have faced difficult problems. People who have fearlessly shared their stories, their struggles, and their successes. People who have priceless personalities. In my new book, Priceless Personalities, Success Stories Shared by January Jones, I am honored to be able to share with you people dealing with problems such as incest, molestation, child abuse, drug abuse, polygamy, unemployment, scandal, starting over, self-esteem, and workplace issues. My guests have all been exciting, eclectic, and energizing. They will amaze, amuse, and even astonish you. You will adore getting to meet them at Amazon.com. My book is now available, 2-for-1, paperback and Kindle editions.
Welcome back with my guest, Bill Dean, and he is a priceless personality. I'm thrilled to have you on the show, Bill. Let's talk about the deathbed confession of Santos Travecante and that why that helped you put the pieces together to this puzzle.
Yeah, well, I didn't have an agenda on this thing, and I didn't know if anything was going to fit. I heard Jack Anderson, and I'm sure you well know Jack Anderson. He was a great muckraker
mm-hmm.
and investigative journalist, and when he came out in 1971 and said the mob did it, I said, he's crazy. And if the mob had done it, the FBI would have arrested them and followed them, and
mm-hmm.
it would have been the end of it and all of that. And I thought it was so daring that he would say that, and I didn't think that he really had the evidence. And I have since learned that he did about four reports over the years after that, and he really hit the nail on the head. And it wasn't my belief, but when after Santos Travecante died
mm-hmm.
In 1987, his great lawyer Frank Regano
mm-hmm.
told us, and just before he died in 1998. That his boss, Santos Travecante,
uh-huh.
according to Regano, said, "We got the wrong Kennedy. We should have gotten Bobby instead." And then he said to Regano, "I got a call, and I can tell you, I just know it's Marcello, who's the boss of New Orleans." He
mm-hmm.
says, "I got a call saying that we've got to find somebody to get Kennedy." And I said, "Sure." And the voice on the telephone, according to Travecante, says,
mm-hmm.
I'll bet you it was, it was Marcello. Well, the voice on the phone said, "We're not talking about Bobby.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about Jack." And Travecante said, "I said, Jack, what's Jack doing to us?"
Mm-hmm.
And the voice on the phone said, with the Sicilian saying, somebody should write a Sicilian mafioso poetry book,
yeah.
And this is one of them. I'm waiting for it. I'd buy it. You cut off the head, meaning the president, the tail won't wag, meaning Bobby.
Yeah.
And that day, the attorney general immediately stopped the crime investigation hearings. Bobby came back to Washington and, without any announcement, immediately ended the crime investigation, the one that had sent in over 100 mobsters to jail. And Marcello from New Orleans was about to go, and he was humiliated a couple of times by Bobby. They didn't do this legally. Maybe you know that that he was handcuffed. He was caught at the New Orleans airport, and they would dump him back back to where he was born in Guatemala. And you can imagine that his lieutenants in the mob down in New Orleans had to be snickering because you know your lieutenants they survive out of total fear that the boss will eliminate you if you talk too much or you don't talk enough or something like that. And there it was, and he was just enraged. You can imagine how humiliated he was that he was dumped off in a little airplane over in Guatemala, and then they said, you figure your way back.
You're on your own.
And you see, the problem is here that you go back to Joe Kennedy.
Okay.
And, Joe Kennedy in the 1920s was a mobster in a way. He was dealing with a mob up in the Boston area, and he was close friends with the president-to-be, President FDR. And when FDR came in, you got to remember that it's Prohibition in the 20s, and everybody, it seemed, wanted to. It's unbelievable to hear that there were like 50,000 speakeasies in New York City. I just can't believe it. I can't believe it. It was sort of just a joke.
Yeah.
Everybody was going and they were having fun most of the times. And in fact, there's a couple of places in New York where they still have the secret doors. They have a library in front, and you open it up, and there's the wine cellar, which still exists, and they still have it. But it was really closed up when the cops came in. But of course, they were paid. It was just a mess and just a joke. And so here, Joe Kennedy was allowed through Roosevelt to load up warehouses filled with booze before Prohibition ended, and then at that moment, it was Joe Kennedy who was making millions of dollars selling the whole area, all of these states with booze that nobody had yet had.
Well, you know, Bill, let me ask you a question. Going back to Joe Kennedy, because I've kind of thought about this, and my thought is that had Joe Kennedy not had that horrific stroke, which pretty much took him out of the picture as far as giving advice to his sons, I think he would have not allowed Bobby to go after the mob in the way he did.
I think that Joe Kennedy would be too smart to do what Bobby did. Bobby wanted to cleanse the family of that reputation of being mobsters, that's why he did this. And he really, threw in over 100 mobsters, and he really hated Marcello, and Marcello really hated him. I'm talking about the boss of New Orleans. And Marcello was about to go. He had already testified a couple of times, and they threw these guys in jail because they were caught in a lie or because they refused to talk. Then, remember where Lee Harvey Oswald was, the ideal guy who's out there, fair play for Cuba. He's handing out leaflets of a committee of one. He was the chairman of the Fair Play of Cuba. As far as we know, there's no other member in New Orleans at that time. There were a few educated people here and there, professors in the United States, that said that we weren't treating, logically, that we weren't treating Castro in good stead. And here's the boss of of New Orleans, and there's Lee Harvey Oswald, who absolutely adored Castro.
Uh-huh.
And he just, because he could relate to him. Here he was a little nobody, and then next to the President of the United States, here's this little nobody, Fidel Castro.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference between that is that Castro knew he was a nobody compared to the President of the United States, and Oswald just loved him. He went over, Oswald went over to Mexico City, which is the way that you could still get into Cuba. You're not
uh-huh.
supposed to fly from New York to Cuba right now, and you can't. Okay. Actually, there isn't any flight. Go to Montreal or go to Mexico City. He left the New Orleans area and the Dallas area and went to Mexico City and went to the Cuban embassy and said, I want to go and see Fidel Castro. At
uh-huh.
this particular time, it was quite obvious that the CIA, under Bobby was running the CIA, and
mm-hmm.
They were out to kill Castro. And it
yeah.
was obvious, and there's no doubt, and nobody will tell you that we were not trying to kill Castro.
Right.
And so here Lee Harvey Oswald is feeling that, hey, this big rich guy Kennedy up there in the White House, you know, and my little friend over here, and he had never met him before, and my little friend over here in Cuba may be killed. And so, of course, Lee Harvey Oswald felt justified to kill the President of the United States to save his friend in his reasoning.
Mm-hmm.
So he went to the Mexico. He sat there for a couple of weeks trying to get a visa over to Havana, and the answer, see, Castro was too smart. He thought that that there might be an assassination, and Oswald might be the
uh-huh.
assassin. And he didn't want his sleeve to touch Oswald at all. Can you imagine those pictures? That
mm-hmm.
never happened. Can you imagine those pictures of a picture of Lee Harvey Oswald shaking hands with Fidel Castro, and then we find out that Lee, you know, we would want to kill Castro. We were playing to kill Castro. We would have bombed him if that happened. If there was so. The FBI and the CIA, they knew of this guy, but the way they operate, they know of a lot of guys and a lot of assassination attempts,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of them are crazy, and so that's why the FBI and the CIA and people, they were totally quiet, and they knew that people would short circuit it and say, "Well, you knew him. Why didn't you stop it before it happened?"
Sure.
Well,
everyone went.
They got 100 of them looking. They're looking for.
Sure. Yeah. And of course, Lee Harvey Oswald. From the moment they got him, he said right out loud, "I'm a patsy," and the whole world heard it. You know, we're gonna go. We're gonna hear from one of my sponsors, and when we come back, we're gonna talk with Bill Dean about why the mob switched sides. First, they were with Castro, and then they hooked up with the CIA. We'll be right back with Bill Dean.
What is AATH? The Association for Applied and Therapeutic Humor is a nonprofit, member-driven international community of humor and laughter professionals and enthusiasts. AATH provides its members the education, cutting-edge resources, and supportive community they need to excel in the practice and promotion of healthy humor. AATH welcomes anyone who is interested in learning more about the application and benefits of therapeutic humor. Members include scholars, psychologists, counselors, nurses, social workers, physicians, educators, clergy, hospital clowns, and many others who incorporate humor in their life and work. AATH was created to disseminate information about humor and laughter, laughter play and well-being, provide a caring, supportive community of humor professionals and enthusiasts. Check out our AATH at www.aath.org today.
Welcome back with my guest, Bill Dean, who is an expert investigative journalist, speaker, and best-selling author of Smooth Criminal, A One-Man American Crime Wave. I'm so pleased to have you on the show, Bill. And, you know, going back to this Joe Kennedy thing, I truly feel that had Joe Kennedy not had that stroke, John Kennedy never would have been assassinated.
I totally agree.
Really?
You just heard the voice of Trafficante saying, hey, you got the wrong guy.
Yeah.
But the reason was that mafioso saying, you cut off the head, the tail won't wag. And that's exactly what happened. Bobby immediately stopped when his brother was assassinated, immediately shut it down. And we have confirmation from the workers, from the office people of Bobby's. And like eight of them said, on different occasions, Bobby Kennedy blurted out during those 4.5 years before he was suicide, his answer was, I think the mob did it, but I don't want to get involved.
Right. Yeah.
Because
yeah.
he probably yeah. sensed that they would come yeah. after him now.
Well, and don't you think it's interesting that the Kennedy family, they never were, they just accepted the flawed Warren Commission, and they never were like really aggressive about finding out.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Absolutely.
Yeah. How strange for a family.
And, yes. And they just wanted to quiet it down. The whole thing was Lyndon Johnson wanted to steal this, and that's why the Warren Commission was created. Mm-hmm. It wasn't created to find out what happened.
No.
It was created to tell the people, hey, it's a single gun. You know, everybody was a single assassin, and that's it, folks. Let's get back to work.
Yeah.
And I know as a journalist that you have to have a complete story before the people quiet down. And mm-hmm. we've never heard the whole story. I'm trying to give you the whole story.
Yeah.
I think if they came out and they showed this the way I'm trying to tell you tonight, I don't think that we'd be talking and talking and talking all these 50 years.
See,
we don't have any problem with the RFK. The RFK, I mean, we have the answer. We have guesses about why Sirhan Sirhan was the killer, but we saw it, and that was it, and nobody's really talking about that. But they're talking on and on and on about this John Kennedy assassination.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the reason.
And now the mob started, first they were with Castro, and then they switched to become the killing machine for the CIA. How did that come about? I mean, can you imagine?
That's really an easy answer. Trafficante, the boss of Tampa, was running the casinos down in Havana.
Uh-huh.
And I got to tell you that at that particular time, Las Vegas was a little hick town. They were making all of their money, or virtually all of their money, in Havana.
Uh-huh.
And Castro was really thinking, because he didn't have that much money in his communism thing, and he was thinking about dealing with the casino operators who were the mobsters.
Okay.
And they tried to get along, and very, very quickly they found out that they couldn't, and Trafficante was thrown in jail and down there, and it took Frank Regano, his attorney, it's estimated between $200,000 and $1 million to get him out of jail and get him back to Tampa.
Wow.
And so... things changed down there, and that was the reason the mob was in favor. They were actually against. They would do anything to get back. And actually, Bobby Kennedy contacted them through Robert Mayhew, who was in Las Vegas, and he had connections with the mob. And Robert Mayhew was a very good, dedicated Catholic. He graduated from Holy Cross and then George Washington University in Washington D.C. I think, and he really had a problem when the Kennedys were telling when Bobby was telling him, we got to make a connection because we need the CIA the mobsters to try to kill Castro as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so they went down there. The mobsters became they didn't, I mean, we wanted to get rid of Castro for political reasons. The United States did, and so did Bobby Kennedy, but the mobsters wanted to get the Havana casinos back. And so politics is strange bedfellows. They both wanted to get Castro. And Bobby went crazy. He just went crazy because they couldn't kill Castro. He was so smart. He outsmarted them so many times.
and isn't it amazing, 50 years later, he's the last one left standing, isn't he?
Yeah, isn't that right?
I know.
Well, the two mobsters, the two kingpins there, Trafficante in Tampa, who was in Havana, and then Marcello in New Orleans, they both died natural deaths.
They did.
They were
uh-huh.
too big. There was a trio. Hoffa was in on this.
Uh-huh.
And that's a whole other story. That's another program. But the three of them.
We'll do another program on that. You know, let's talk a little bit about Sam Giancana and his connection with Judith Exner and her affair with the president.
I want to get to that, and we'll do that right now.
Okay.
The Kennedy boys couldn't shake the mob connection to the family.
Uh-huh.
Jack Kennedy was running for the Democratic presidential nomination. It was in trouble, and it looked like Hubert Humphrey might win West Virginia, which would then be enough delegate votes to take it to the convention, and Humphrey would win, and Jack Kennedy would lose. He wouldn't get the nomination. So here we go again. Father Joe's on the phone to Chicago mobster Sam Giancana, and he's asking for some help. Can you help me? And Sam is always ready to help, you know. Of course, then you owe your life to Sam.
Yeah.
And it was in desperation. Joe wanted Jack to be president more than anything else, and before he died, too. So Sam was delighted to help him out. He says, no problem. We'll get the union bosses in West Virginia, and the rank and file will do what they're told.
Uh-huh.
And they did, and Kennedy beat Humphrey in West Virginia, and then he was nominated by the party. In trouble again, as it looked like Nixon might win in the closest national election in history at that time. This is before Florida of a few years ago. Sam does another favor for the Kennedys, holding the Chicago vote until 9 o'clock in the morning. Do you remember that?
Oh,
we
yes,
didn't know
I
who
do.
Was president.
We
it
did not.
It went on and on and on. Now, you know, we knew that Romney had lost like 11:30 at night on the East Coast.
Uh-huh.
And here it waits until 9 o'clock in the morning, and we're waiting, and Lyndon Johnson over in Texas is doing the same thing. Now, as it turned out, the jiggering and the trucks that were coming with the Republican votes never seemed to get to the counting booths. Over that night, things were jiggered so that Kennedy got the Chicago vote, which gave him Illinois, and that was enough to put him over in the presidency, very, very close. Johnson was holding the Texas vote, and I don't know what he was going to do, but I think in desperation, I think he would have jiggered the vote down there. But he didn't have to. It was all Sam Giancana. He took care of it up in Chicago.
Now we've got
a president who's owned by the mafioso.
They were
dancing around at the White House and enjoying things like they owned the place, and they, in their own mind, felt that they elected the president Kennedy.
Well, you see why they felt that way. And the amazing thing is that it's just so hard to comprehend that Bobby would have gone after these people once they were elected. I mean, talk about
this is double crossing.
Yeah,
when Jack was elected, the first thing Bobby said as Attorney General, he says, "Well, we're going to take care of the mobsters," and they took care of him.
What a stupid thing to say. You know, Bill, we're going to hear from one of my sponsors, and when we come back, I want to talk a little bit with you about Frank Sinatra, the Rat Pack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just getting to that. So that's
the Marilyn Monroe situation.
Oh, yes.
We'll be right back with Bill Dean.
I know that well.
Are you a fitness professional, a trainer, or a coach? Would you like consistent and timely updates on your team's performance? We have a completely customizable app that can give you real-time information via the internet or your handheld phone. Track the performance of your client's progress with their physical fitness regimen. Track team members' performance or schedule a workout session. Meet up at the gym, on the bike trail, or wherever your physical activities take you. The app is called Socially Fit, or SoFit, and can be found on the iTunes Store. Look for the blue Socially Fit icon. When combined with data analysis capabilities, you not only feel the effects of your fitness routine, you also see the graphical progress of your results. The app makes the complex simple, so that more of your time is spent sculpting your physique, with less time tracking your results with old-fashioned pen and paper. Download it today to begin a new year with data to show your progress in meeting your goals. Are you socially fit?
Well, I hope everyone out there listening, if you are not socially fit, I hope you will become this year. We're with Bill Dean, and Bill, I want you to share your website information and tell my listeners where they can get your wonderful book.
Yes, you can get it on Amazon and just Amazon Books, and rather than tell you the whole thing, which is Smooth Criminal, a one-man American crime wave, who can remember all that, we'll just say all you got to do is put Smooth Criminal Bill.
Criminal.
Otherwise, okay. you'll get Michael Jackson's famous song, and I'm not criticizing that, but it's not the assassination story.
Yeah, no.
So just Smooth Criminal Bill, and you get that over at Amazon Books, and it's on Kindle, and it's on paperback.
Okay.
We have some hardbacks, but they're not selling them there.
Okay.
And you
wonderful.
Can also get it over at Barnes & Noble, POD.
Okay, fantastic. And your website?
Yes, my website tries to do what we are not allowed and what I was not allowed to at times to do on the air. There are a lot of commercials and so forth. For example, the networks are just kissing off the GMO story, and you didn't even know if you were watching evening news that there was a big important vote in Washington State just recently, and you just didn't hear about it. And the big corporations scared the hell out of people, and they voted in favor of what the big corporations wanted, which was to keep GMO labeling away from us, so we don't have an opportunity to make that judgment.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to say that Kennedy boys couldn't shake the mob, and you can see why.
Yeah.
and what happened to my friend, my smooth criminal? He wanted to be another Frank Sinatra, and nobody, RCA Victor, didn't care about him, and so he went to a mafioso record production company, and they made the record for him, and then they said, "Now, we've done you a favor, kid.
Yeah.
You got to do us a favor." And then he became a mobster, and he was caught and thrown in jail, and the CIA met him. But that's another story. What I want to say is that the Kennedy boys couldn't shake the mob. Jack Kennedy, running for the Democratic presidential nomination, was in trouble. And then, as I said, they got the West Virginia primary. Then they got then the mob helped out in the major in the presidential election. Now, it seems like Johnson was ready to do anything, as I say, and it's too bad that Lyndon Johnson has been accused of being the assassin simply because he was in Dallas that day.
Mm-hmm.
That's absolutely crazy. I mean, it happened to be his state, and people with assassination on the brain.
Yeah, who would do it in your own state? I mean, if you were going to do it, you would do it somewhere else.
And that's another thing. They accuse, and Dallas has had this albatross
stigma
around its neck for so long. Mm-hmm. Hey, they were trying to do it in Chicago. They wanted to send the message in Chicago because look at what we did for you. We got you president,
right,
and now we're going to kill you. And that was three weeks before, and these guys in this motel where they were going to shoot down on the president's motorcade, when they found out that the motorcade had been changed, the CIA changed, the FBI changed the route, and obviously they had some suspicion that the president coming to see the Air Force Army game in Chicago that day ought to say, I have other business and I can't come, and they changed the route. In fact, the president didn't even come that day. Willing. Yes, go ahead.
I wanted to hear more before we go. We only have a few minutes.
Okay.
What about Marilyn Monroe?
Yes,
and
absolutely.
What happened
here,
there?
Here we are. Always willing to do favors, as you've learned in the past hour. Sam Giancana provided women for the Kennedy brothers, including Marilyn, Monroe, and his ex-girlfriend, Judith Campbell Exner, also.
Yeah.
And there were, that was, things were fine between Jack Kennedy and Judith until Judith, in bedroom talk, blurted out something that Kennedy immediately knew. Judith was the messenger girl who was taking information from JFK from his bedroom, or whatever the bedroom is, certainly not the White House. Jackie was on a trip or something.
Yeah, for
but,
sure.
But then figured out that Judith was the messenger girl over to Sam Giancana, and out went the Rat Pack, the Sinatra, all
Everyone.
Of these mobsters walking around the White House like they owned the place. And Mother Rose Kennedy ordered the boys, the two brothers, to stay away from Marilyn, that she might go to the press.
Uh-huh.
And they obeyed Marilyn's frantic calls to Jack. She went crazy because I'm not saying Kennedy told her this, but she somehow, or maybe in bedroom talk, she had the idea that after Jack ran his 8 years, that they were going to get married.
Oh,
that
wow.
he was going to divorce. He was going to divorce Jackie and Mary. I mean, it seems ludicrous, but that was Marilyn's thought. And
well,
so,
you know, it's not that ludicrous because, let's face it, she married Joe DiMaggio, Arthur Miller. So for her, it was probably a very realistic.
Yeah. Well, marrying Arthur Miller, that was something. He was an intellectual, and he would at parties and so forth joke about how dumb Marilyn was. You know.
But didn't J. Edgar Hoover get involved in this Marilyn thing?
Oh, he followed. He followed this whole thing. He was very, very much involved,
sure.
And he had assignments all over the place with spies in the White House and everything else. It's so funny. This man pretended to be so moral.
Yeah,
and
now we know.
You had to, if you were an FBI agent, you had to have a family with children and that kind of thing. And here he was, a gay, a closet gay, and he was doing what he felt like, but he didn't want his people to do it.
If we had only known that then, I mean, it's unbelievable the way this whole thing has played out over the last 50 years.
I gotta say before we go that I talked to a Los Angeles County Assistant District Attorney, and he told me privately that it was after 5 hours after they killed Marilyn, and they killed her very cleverly by injecting her. And you see, Marilyn had a little house, and it was kind of funny. She had the big house, and she only felt comfortable in the little house that didn't even have any closets. And this woman that was there, the housekeeper, name escapes me at this moment. I don't know why she didn't know all of this was going on. The assistant DA told me that for 5 hours they cleaned that house. He says there were Marilyn's fingerprints were not any place either. They cleaned that place up so much. And did Kennedy order her death? No, it's not that done that way. It's not that obvious. Kennedy expressed that he had a problem with Marilyn, and Marilyn might go and talk. And that's all you have to say to the mob, and the mob will say, we'll take care of it.
Yeah.
And they do in
that.
Their own way. So you're totally disconnected to it, you know.
Exactly.
You tell the mob that you have a problem, and they'll tell you that they'll be glad to take care of it for you.
You know,
what they do is totally unknown to you and out of your control.
Bill, this has just been wonderful having you on the show, and I hope you will come back again during this 50th year and talk with us again about the Kennedy assassination. And I'd also love to do a show with you about Smooth Criminal, One-Man American Crime Wave.
That deals with Castro and Cuba. It's a one thing, if I got time to say it. This is about the CIA looking. No, I don't have time.
You don't have time.
All right.
Promise me you'll come back.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure talking to you and talking to your audience, too.
All right. Thank you. And to our wonderful listeners, we hope you've enjoyed our show today. Remember my mantra, if you think it, then you can do it. So for now, dear friends, please stop whining, start smiling, and then start sharing our show with everyone you know. And if that doesn't work, start eating chocolate, lots and lots of chocolate. Again, thank you to my wonderful guest, Bill Dean. This is January Jones thanking you for joining me today on my journey and reminding you to take care and stay safe.
We want to thank you for listening to January Jones Sharing Success Stories. Always remember Ms. Jones' personal mantra, if you can think it, you can do it. That's what all of our guests have done with their lives, and so can you. You are the ultimate success coach in your own life. All you need to do will be to start sharing your own story with your family and friends. We hope that our guest stories will encourage you to explore an equation in your future that will combine your creativity, plus connecting with others will enable you to be successful too. Always remember, your passion plus your purpose will equal prosperity as you explore the wonderful world of January Jones.